in Poets Respond in January of 2018. And it was a response to a story about Facebook and how Facebook pits users against each other psychologically, and essentially ruining their lives. And I've had it about up to here with Facebook. So it's called Worth It. You too are currency. You can be saved, devalued, spent, invested, thrown away, or burned. In this town, roads are paved with skeletons of folks like you and me. Your net worth isn't what you thought it was. Pursuing happiness, you work for free. You're better than this, you tell yourself as you Google who you are. And who are you? Data, as it turns out. Go now. Erase your name from the wine dark sea of Facebook blue before you're bought and sold. But it's too late. The work is done. What more is there to do but punch the clock and rue what's left of fate? In bed, you count your sheep and calculate. And that it's actually a sonnet written in terza rima,
yes.
Which I copied from Robert Frost. So, pace, Robert Frost. So I'm going to read four poems from my book, which isn't out, unfortunately, until next year. The book It's going to be published by Kelsey Books,
okay,
from Utah. And there's a story behind that as well, but I'm not going to tell it. Just a little bit of biographical information, because the next few poems are highly biographical. My mother is from Boston, and my father was from Rome, and they met here in the 60s, and they fell in love, etc., etc., and I and my sister were born in the United States. My father died when I was 15, that was 1990. My mother is still alive, she just turned 80, but she's living in a home and she's suffering from dementia. So this poem is called Runaway, and it's the opening poem in my book. And it's me imagining their first meeting, which is something that I've been told routinely over the course of my life, but I put myself in their heads this time. So I'm kind of telling the story through their psychology. Bad language warning, if anybody's sensitive. Runaway. My mother is sitting alone on a park bench in Villa Borghese eating a sandwich. It isn't an easy thing to find a sandwich in Rome in 1966. She's had to root out the Bar degli Americani in Via Veneto near the embassy in order to find ham on white bread. No mayonnaise. Imagine that. A Jewish girl eating a ham sandwich on a park bench in Rome with no mayo. What's she doing there, so far from home? And where is home, anyway? Her parents' home in Brookline, Massachusetts? That isn't home. Not anymore. She ran away from that home, came to Rome via Paris, via San Francisco. Anywhere but at the Shabbos table with that tyrant, her mother, and her ineffectual father. A ham sandwich on a park bench is better than that, she says to herself, as a dapper man appears, dressed in a smart black suit. She notices his teeth. Naively, she thinks he might be Marcello Mastroianni, her singular destiny to meet a movie star, fall in love, and become his wife. Live happily ever after. The fantasies that run through a young woman's head. This man is not Eddie Fisher, nice Jewish boy, dungaree doll. This man is a smooth talker. He wants to sell her something. Realizing she's American, he begins speaking in his broken schoolboy English. He turns on the charm, and she is charmed. What's he selling? Wine. What else? You are in Italy, poor girl, eating a sandwich all alone. He overwhelms her, makes her feel like Audrey Hepburn. She, in turn, is an easy target. Not like Italian women. To get into their pants, you have to go through their families. He knows. He's got two sisters. He's always beating up guys in his neighborhood for putting their hands on them. He's got a reputation. But everyone knows American women are unmoored. Why else do they come here? To get into trouble. To meet a Casanova. To have what they call a fling. He learned that word in a movie. Then they go back home and get married to a Rock Hudson or a John Wayne, have two kids and two cars, and pursue their dreams of happiness. Europeans have history. Americans have dreams. That seems to him a profound insight. My mother crinkles the cellophane into a ball, rolls it in her palm, brushes the crumbs from her skirt. He looks at her knees, the skin boldly exposed, wonders what's beyond them. She isn't thin, he thinks, as he absorbs her body with his eyes. He isn't subtle. You don't need to be in Rome in 1966. All you need to have is charm, and he has excellent charm. She decides in that moment she will go anywhere with this man. She will do anything he asks. She has nothing to lose, no one waiting for her on the other side of the ocean, no Eddie Fisher. Her brother is married to a German. Her brother, the magician, who disappeared into a German woman and never came out. How she would like to disappear into this man, fall into the black hole of him, learn to curse her own parents in his tongue, allow the sensual inflections of Italian to evict the Yiddish gutturals lodged in her throat like fish bones. How she would like to learn to trill her R's, double her consonants, strap a crucifix around her neck for the sheer pleasure of seeing her mother's dumbstruck punnin, bury her alive with Roman invective, li mortacci tua, fuck your dead ancestors, tear the crucifix off and flush it down the toilet, having exhausted its usefulness. She smooths her skirt, a little flushed. And I have to say that I'm almost glad that my mother can't read that poem. Because I don't think she'd appreciate it.
She might surprise you.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking the same.
I'll never know.
I actually asked him to read this poem because when I read it online, I said, oh my God.
I'll never know. And I'm not sure that I want to know. So that the next poem I'm going to read is the title poem from my collection. It's called Unburial. And this is a poem which I actually relived walking here today because our family has an apartment in the San Pietro neighborhood. And I was waiting for the bus, and today's a holiday, and there are very few buses. And I said, you know what? I'll just walk. I used to walk this way all the time. I've been walking this route for 40 years. So I just ducked into the Vatican, walked around the colonnade in St. Peter's, walked over the bridge in Castel Sant'Angelo, walked through Campo Marzio, and here I am. And it dawned on me that the poem that I'm going to read you talks about all the landmarks on the way, mm-hmm. from one way to from one place to the next. So it's a very Roman poem, and it's got a lot of Italian in it. It's called Unburial. I learned your language to unbury you, to feel again your mossy Roman beard beneath my fingers, to be thunderstruck again by your accent. You were straniero, never Americano, held on to your green card like any immigrant with an ounce of hope. Phone calls were costly then, AT&T selling you a can and string to unspool across the Atlantic Ocean. Once a month, you dial up your sisters in San Pietro, vernacular for the neighborhood in Rome where you grew up, a stone's throw from Michelangelo's copper cupolone. It was still Oltre Tevere back then, beyond the Tiber. Now prime real estate, streets clogged like arteries with tourist buses craning to see the Pope play peekaboo. As kids, we'd boomerang indifferently beneath the saint-studded cornice, feed the horses stalled on sizzling cobblestones black as iron ore, leapfrog the piazza shaped like a keyhole, chase fattened pigeons around the Egyptian obelisks as fountains exploded at twilight. We'd snack souple at kiosks mozzarella, chewing gum, hanging from our lips, slurp grattachecca, a Roman snowball, mint and tamarind, our favorite flavors when the weather got hot. You told us tales of how as a young man you'd leap from the Ponte Sant'Angelo into that ancient Roman waterway which ferried Cleopatra to her lovers, and under whose silt history lies still. You'd navigate us through your marble world of alleyways and statuary, halting every 50 yards to chit-chat, chiacchierare. We'd lick our ice cream cones and roll our eyes as you talked politics and calcio with men you'd never met. It seemed you knew everyone, everywhere you went, possessed passports permitting you to redraw boundaries of circumspection. I am not gifted that way. Small talk is work for me. Pace. You'd treat us to a poisoned apple, mela stregata, at your favorite haunt along the river, a mural of snow white beaming over the travertine countertop. Castel Sant'Angelo, with its eerie cells, marked our home turf. Heirs to history, our spindly American bodies catalogued each twist and alcove in Rome's wrenching gut. The moment we caught sight of the rain-streaked dome, the final stretch was on us. We'd walk fast, weaving Bernini's dreaming columns, lost inside temporal power's broken skull, until we reached familiar ochre walls. 5 flights up, our aunts prepared a feast, the television blasting evening news, staccato jargon to our ears, the first and only time we were a family. Extended, patriarchal, skin on bone. Already you'd sown the seeds of divorce, but wouldn't reveal it for another year. Your cock, that well-fed American bird, was busy in another henhouse. Rome wouldn't have punished you as haphazardly as her mother did when she threw you out. After all, a man must take a lover to keep his marriage happy. Wasn't that the pragmatic guiding philosophy of your continental friends? Marriage was not for you, not for either of you, although you'd both repeat the misadventure until it murdered you. Having finally set foot, like an explorer on stable ground, heart attack shifted the tectonic plates of our lives, sealed your misdirected fate senza cerimonie, as you would say. The coroner pronounced you DOA. The funeral was scheduled for a Friday in February, the earth rock hard outside the stony chapel. The pastor said his piece, he who had only known you for a year. We sealed you in the mineral earth you loved. Because my dad was a rock collector. He was an amateur rock collector, and he had this collection of rocks and minerals, and that was his passion. And so he would go collecting them with his chisel and his hammer. And so there's a lot of references to rocks and things like that. Do I have time for another one?
Why not?
Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. I want to do a happy one because those two were kind of grim. So here's probably the only happy poem in the book. Yeah, poets are grim. But it's about where I grew up in Maryland, in suburban Maryland. There was a pond. There was like this barn, old barn. And behind the barn was a hill. And at the bottom of the hill was a pond. And when I was a kid, winter was still cold enough that the pond would freeze over and you could skate on it. I don't think it does that anymore. And we'd go ice skating on this pond with everybody in the neighborhood. And they would have these big green oil drums, and they would light fires in them, right? And you'd go and you'd warm your hands on the fire, mm-hmm. like right in the middle of the pond. And so this is a memory that I've had since then, called The Skaters. And there's a short epigraph from Virgil's Aeneid. And years, so many years. The dragonflies of summer have all vanished. Now, people warm their hands above strange fires blazing from big green oil drums. There are holes in the sides. I wonder what made them there. Neighbors, mostly. Girls lacing up their skates in packs. The smoke and spark of fire sticks jutting out over the lip. Burning, burning. My parents are somewhere walking on water together. My sister is here, her hand in mine, steadying me. Off to the right is where the man with the firebird lives, the one who followed me, in those apartments over there. Don't go there by yourself. Repeat, don't go when my father hoists me and we're off. Yeah, it's the only poem in the book where my parents aren't divorced yet. So. And I'm just going to read a quick final poem, which is another happy moment. And it's a poem about the moon, because I like moon poems. And it's called To the Horned Moon. And it's about the kind of moon that looks like bull's horns. How often I meet you here, above the trees and houses nested in sleep. The edges of you, ringed, luminescent as a dropped nickel in a pool of crude oil. Copper-crowned night, twilit and electric blue, presiding above the world unchallenged. What star measures up to you? None I know of. They're too far. You, on the other hand, so close I could take you by the horns, wrestle you to earth, or steer you forever at 10 million miles per hour, straight out of the universe. Okay. Thank you. All